Blog Talk Radio. This is Love's Outer Limits, and I'm your host, Dr. Amy Marsh, sexologist, hypnotist, lots of other kinds of things, and I'm with my co-host, M. Christian, otherwise known as Chris, erotica writer, sexuality writer, sexual futurist, and also lots of all kinds of other things. We've got a great show lined up for you today, so welcome. Well, hello and good morning. And hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Definitely recharged after total exhaustion yesterday. I don't even know why. But here we are this morning, and I actually feel a little revived. How about you?
Good, good. I've had my coffee. I'm having my tea. I've done a little piddly stuff during the morning, so I'm all set.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we're going to do our usual shout-outs. Do you want to go ahead and go first, or shall I?
Why don't you do this time? I did mine last time, I think.
Okay. All right. We're taking turns, folks. We're being real fair. So, and to all of you out there, listeners, we're so glad to have you on board today. All right. So, we're always shouting out Tickle.life. We love them. They've given us a page for their podcast. They have tons of writers, podcasters, people providing sex positive content, and also a lot of resources for COVID-19. So go to Tickle.life. And we actually hope to be interviewing the founder in a couple of weeks, Shakun Sethi. So that'll be great when we get her on board. Other shout-outs, I'm going to wait on that because I'm going to be mentioning a number of different people through this podcast today on erotic entertainment, and I have most of the information plugged into our show notes right now, but not everybody. So I think I'll stop here, and over to you, Chris.
Well, thank you so much. I probably want to shout out the wonderful but usual suspects of futureofsex.net, which is one of my all-time favorite places to write for, Kinkly, and a big shout-out also for Sex for Everybody, which is a really wonderful resource for people who might be physically challenged or a disability or something similar. It's really highly recommended. And let's see, and Queer Majority is also another wonderful place I want to give my little shout-out for. It's like busy, busy, busy.
Busy, 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 indeed. And, you know, one of the things that's so amazing is there are so many artists, performers, musicians creating content over the internet and also in some sort of limited actual capacities as well, but we'll get into that later. But, you know, our artists, our musicians, our burlesque dancers, our drag queens, our erotic performers of all different kinds, you know, they're all struggling. They're all trying to make a living during this weird time. And we're very poised and, you know, we're about to jump into something we don't really know. You know, what are things going to look like over the next few weeks? So I think something I want to do is encourage people listening to send a little money. If you watch a video that you like on YouTube from one of your favorite performers, tip them. They're starting to ask for tips now, and we can do that. We can help send a little love and a little cash their way. So where do you want to start on this? There's so much to be said.
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's such a wide variety of subjects here because, I mean, erotic entertainment used to just be like movies and the written word. Now there's all kinds of different things, you know, interactive materials. I mean, there's just, it seems like it's expanded so much.
Yeah, yeah, it really has. I mean, we have all these amazing tools that we can get our hands on pretty easily if we have a little cash, and really create content and do it also in collaboration with other people using, you know, the internet and all this technology. It's really something. It used to be way back. I think even before you and I were born, there were things like Stag Films and Tijuana Bibles, which was, you know, I mean, a terrible name, but that's what they called these pornographic comic books that would come out. You know, people had to, racy postcards, racy French postcards. I mean, that was kind of it, you know, for a long time. And there were some movies, you know, not just Stag Films, but, you know, some stuff started to be created. Of course, erotic art. Painters have always, including many very, very famous and accomplished ones, have always turned their thoughts and their talents towards erotica, production of erotica. And sometimes those productions survive, and sometimes they're, you know, destroyed after the artist dies, which is, you know, really a terrible thing to contemplate. But I happened to watch something today. It was on the Wicked Grounds Facebook group, and I just happened to check in there because I wanted to give Wicked Grounds Cafe and Boutique in San Francisco a plug in this show. And somebody had posted this short film called Marcy Learns Something New, and it was only 15 minutes long. It was totally delightful. It was the story is a woman who's widowed, who's trying to, you know, find herself and taking exercise classes, and it's all really not very fun. And somehow she ends up in a class for how to be a dominatrix, or how to bring female domination into your romantic life. And oh my God, it was just so incredible. It's on YouTube. Marcy Learned Something New. I loved it for many different reasons. Partially because it's something that I could show clients of mine who are getting interested in kink, but maybe haven't ventured very far yet. And so it's kind of a perfect little teaching tool. There's some criticisms of the film. You know, I mean, there was not a safe word to be seen. But, you know, other than that, it was a great little intro. And I actually found myself in tears towards the end of it. It was really kind of amazing for me. So I guess I'm saying you can find some surprising things that might move you in erotic ways, even if they're not very explicit, right there on YouTube. Let's see. So that's my first thing I want to plug. What do you want to do?
Well, not to sound self-aggrandizing, I have written a couple of erotic things that I always want to give a boost to. You know, my newest one is a collection of erotic science fiction stories called Hard Drive, which was part of a contest. I think it expires today to get a free audiobook version of. But I think more than anything, I just kind of when I call out to people to sort of experiment. See, it's like, you know, that's the whole thing about erotic entertainment these days. It's expanded so much, and there's so many different ways of enjoying it, and so many different ways, so many different orientations and interests that are out there. It can be a little staggering, but at the same time, I think it can be very rewarding to sort of like use it to sort of expand your sexual horizons, you know, investigate things you might be curious about or have maybe even a little passing interest in. But, you know, it's out there now and you can take a look at it.
Absolutely. And speaking of your book, did you want to read something for that today, or do you want to save that for our future episode?
Not to disappoint, I think I'll save it for a future episode. I mean, it's funny, we were just talking about this the other day. It's like, you know, my speaking voice and my running voice are very different, so it makes, you know, performing a little bit challenging. So I think next time we'll do it for sure, because I can prep myself up a little bit more. But, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there, so people can take a look at it. And, you know, a lot of my books have been turned into audiobooks through the wonderful auspices of Word Roots Publishing. And, you know, they've done a wonderful job, and they have much more professional readers than myself.
Can you give the URL for that so people know where to find you?
Sure.
And
I mean,
find
just
your books
I can
audio?
Look it up really quickly.
Okay.
Usually my books are published as ebooks or paperbacks through Sizzler Editions, which is a division of Renaissance Ebooks, and the audio is through WordWooze, which is WordWooze.com.
Perfect. I'll put that in the show notes after the show so people can find that. And Sizzler Editions is definitely a great source to mention. And I only get a certain number of characters in our show notes, but I'll do what I can to maybe I'll remove some text so that I can put more of the links in here while we're doing it. Sorry, folks, for a little administrative details there. I think one of the things that's been fascinating me, Chris, is that people are, during this time of, you know, social isolation and, you know, being unable to gather, they're doing some really amazing creative things. And one of the things that crossed my path today when I was sort of bumping around the internet looking for content is that the Lucky Devil Lounge in Portland has repurposed their strip club to, and they've always had a kitchen. Okay, so they've always served food. But what they're doing food delivery. It's basically burlesque and burgers, and they've got a strip through. So cars drive down the center aisle outside. There are the go-go dancers with poles on either side of the cars. Dancers will deliver food. Everybody's wearing a mask. Everybody's wearing gloves. They get their temperature taken every day before they enter the building. I mean, they have got it down. And in this way, this particular place has been able to keep on about a quarter of their workforce, which is really, really great. And one of the things that's so unfair is that adult-themed businesses, they don't get funds. They don't get federal funds. They don't get any help during this pandemic. The small business stuff just doesn't go their way. It's prohibited. So they've got to do what they can to stay alive and keep their people employed. And in the interview, this was on NBC, the interview with the owner, and I didn't catch his name. You know, he made the point that a lot of his employees, including pretty much all the dancers, they're responsible for supporting children, elderly parents. You know, they're the breadwinners in their family. And so it was really, really important to him to keep people employed as much as he possibly could. So I thought that was great. I love the footage of, you know, the drive-through, strip-through. There's no nudity, but, you know, the dancers are definitely provocative and sexy. And everybody's having fun. And they're wearing a mask while they're doing it. And they're far enough apart so that they should be okay outside. So I thought that was a really, really cool thing to come across. I also mentioned Wicked Grounds in San Francisco, which has been doing, now that the cafe is temporarily closed, they've got a lot of online classes. And you might not think of classes as entertainment, but, you know, learning something new can definitely keep you entertained. And especially if you're learning something new that's erotic and kinky or maybe about polyamory. I mean, they've got a wide range of offerings. So I definitely encourage people to check out the Wicked Grounds website, which is really wickedgrounds.com. Okay. I'm going to stop talking. What else? This is like a ball. We're just talking back and forth.
I really want to give a call out to Devil Lounge again because, you know, you're right. They're doing so many wonderful things, and I think it's also really fun and interesting that, you know, they're not the only ones who are doing this. I mean, they're one of the best well-known, but there's also there's a strip club in Vegas that's doing the same thing, and a lot of strip clubs are actually going virtual now. They're using things like, you know, Zoom. They're using things like Instagram, that kind of thing. And so they're kind of expanding. In fact, some of them have gotten huge publicity. The only problem is some of these venues, you know, meaning Instagram and Zoom, are not being supportive of this, which is really sad. I mean, we talked previously about Zoom is, you know, possibly working on an algorithm to sort of like, you know, flag what they consider obscene content, you know, which is just frankly despicable. But, you know, people are usually pretty creative and there's always kind of ways around these things. But, yeah, do a little research because it's important to support, you know, these new venues, because once again, it's like, you know, you're like you just said perfectly. It's like, you know, these people have, you know, mouths to feed. They have people that depend on them. And it's really criminal that, you know, the powers that be just decide that anyone who deals with anything to do with sex is automatically doesn't get help, which is just infuriating.
Yeah. And so you're following this particular thing with Zoom, are you? Or do we have any updates on that?
Not as far as I know. I can check.
Yeah, I mean, don't check now, but I just wondered if I know we.
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping my ear down to it. You know, because it's one of those things. It's like it's also just, you know, very infuriating because they're from what I've read, they're going to use like an algorithm to try and do this, which is like they're not even going to use human intervention. And again, it's kind of like the same situation that's hit many social media platforms over the last couple of years, where they, you know, any idea of anything that might have to do with human sexuality, they just kind of run screaming for the hills, which is just, once again, very infuriating.
And it's so hypocritical. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, it's the hypocrisy is, well, we're just awash with hypocrisy right now, especially in the U.S. I agree, it's infuriating. It just is so unnecessary too. I mean, come on, you know, let's find a cure for the virus and leave the strip clubs and the webcam people and everybody else alone, okay? There's better things to focus on here. But I've come across a really amusing array of things just sort of knocking around the internet. And I know there's much, much more out there, but for example, Instagram seems to be very supportive of a lot of performers and a lot of people doing stuff, which is great. And the Battery in San Francisco is doing something every now and then called Digital Drag Queen Bingo. So you get to watch for an hour, you get to watch some performers, you get to see some jokes, you get to play bingo, they issue an electronic card. I mean, it seems a little complicated, but I'm sure people are able to work their way through this pretty well. And if they win at bingo, there's some kind of fabulous prize that they're going to get. So that's super entertaining, and that's keeping the, you know, at least some members of the drag community in San Francisco, you know, out there doing their work and hopefully earning some cash. These things are paid for, of course. I mean, you buy tickets to go to these digital events. There's something really intriguing that I came across. Hollow Eve, who was one of the performers on, I think it was episode 2 of Dragula. I hope I've gotten that right. Anyway, Hollow Eve has something called Plague Mass, which is a digital performance where lots and lots and lots of performers get on, and it's really wonderfully dark and scary and evocative images and costumes that people are pulling together in their performances. I think they had one just a night or two ago. I wish I'd known. The tickets were $10. I would have really liked to see it, but I think that was the second one. So I'm assuming that Hollow Eve will do a series, but that looked really, really cool. And it was at a venue, kind of a platform that was new to me. I can't remember what it is right now, but I did put a link in our show notes. So people are making ways for performers to get out there, to earn some money, and to continue their careers during this time. And there seems to be a real collaborative, spirit that, you know, especially out, I think, in the, in the drag community. I think people are really helping each other in a lot of ways, creating these venues. I like it. Let's see.
I completely agree. I think it's also interesting how I think during the first few weeks, people were kind of in shock. Things just simply weren't happening because, once again, it's a very stressful situation. But now that we're kind of getting used to it, more and more things are popping up as, people start to realize that, hey, we don't have to stop doing fill-in-the-blank. We can actually bring it online. I mean, there's classes, like you mentioned before, there are offers. There's many people who are performing, reading their works. There's all kinds of erotic entertainers moving online. And so I think that's really wonderful that, that people are being that kind of experimental and also supportive. I mean, you mentioned before, like there's some places like many of the adult entertainment, giants are offering, discounts or, special sales during the epidemic, which I think is really kind of cool, is that they're kind of like trying to make things as easy as possible, or at least, people can entertain themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then we can support them as, as they're offering us this entertainment. I'm a big fan of podcasts, of course, ours included. And you've got, you want to talk about your other secret life, your other podcast, Chris? You want to talk about that for a minute? Of course, it's not secret, but I'm just poking you here.
Well, not to turn this into the, the Chris Publicity Hour, but yeah, I'm doing another one right now with my friend Ralph Greco Jr., called Licking Non Vanilla. If you go to my Twitter feed, which is mchristianzobop, you'll get all kinds of information on it, where it's located. I think one of the first shows are up there. It's unlike the one I do with the wonderful Dr. Amy, it's actually recorded and then done later on. This is actually a live show. But yeah, it's interesting because it's like, Ralph and I have a different chemistry than I do with, the wonderful Dr. Amy. But it's interesting how this has worked. Like, I never would have in a million years thought about doing podcasts. And, now, of course, it's like it just makes perfect sense. I mean, so I was talking to someone the other day, and they're talking about, sex educators, people who do it, go to events or, do, live classes, and how this current situation is going to change that. And frankly, their opinion is the same exact mine. It's like, I'm probably not going to go back to teaching live. I can reach more people. I can do more things. I mean, yes, certain things that are more hands-on or more challenging. But, for classes like erotica writing, it just makes a lot more sense. And, for one, it's also just financially, but two, it's less stress on the environment, less stress on me. So I think that's really cool, the way that, we're sort of integrating all this new technology and changing the way we consider, sex education and sex entertainment. I think it's really wonderful.
Yeah, it is. And there is so much out there, people. There's something for everybody. I found myself unexpectedly riveted in a really kind of strange, God, I can't believe I'm talking about this, in a very strange and almost kinky way by some footage that was on Twitter of somebody steam cleaning a plush Pokemon doll. At first I thought they were shaving the fur because there was a very definite color change. I mean, I'm not kidding. It was riveting. It was hypnotic. The way that as I figured out later, it was a small steam cleaner device gliding softly over. I can't believe it, this plush doll. I mean, I won't say that I was turned on, but I was fascinated in a way that was close to being turned on. Now, I don't know what's up with that. Maybe I've been alone in quarantine way too long. But, you can get your jollies from some surprising things out there. So, yeah.
Oh, I think it's wonderful.
It was weird, I tell you. Going from Marcy learned something new to the steam cleaning the plush Pokemon doll. I was a little surprised. Not so much at Marcy. I knew that about me, but the plush Pokemon doll, definitely. I don't know. Maybe it was like geared towards furries. I'm really not sure. But it was very compelling. I think Andy Warhol said that the only reason people clean is because they like to see things change color. And so it kind of had that for me too. I don't know. Oh God. Wow. Having to take a sip of tea here. Going to pause for a minute. Chris, say something so I can, take them to.
I agree with you. It's like, I think in some ways it's like, you know, people always talk about old things, you know, they always bemoan things are changing. And it's like, you know, some changes are definitely for the better. And I think in the world of erotic entertainment, I like the fact now that, like, the giants of production pretty much are gone. I mean, there's some places that are still doing it. But, you know, nowadays it's like, you know, it's pretty much an amateur market because, first of all, there's no overhead. You don't have to worry about, you know, paying somebody else to, you know, distribute and such. But I also think it's wonderful because we have so many different options, not just in the top, not just in how you view it, but in what you can view. I mean, you mentioned, like, you know, with the steam cleaning video, it's like you name the sexual interest and somebody somewhere has dedicated a lot of their time to either generating it or supporting it. And so I think that's actually quite wonderful. I mean, as long as it's consensual and as long as then no one's being harmed, I think it's, you know, perfectly legitimate. And I also think it's very empowering because, you know, if you're feeling guilty or shameful for whatever your desire is, you know, a quick search on the internet will learn that not only are you not the only one, but there's an entire community built based around what you like. So I just think that's really quite special.
I suppose when I get off of this podcast, I might be Googling Pokemon steam cleaning porn. I'm not sure. I'll let you know what I find. I don't know if there's a community out there for that, but I wouldn't be surprised at this point. Let's see. I wanted to mention this also, speaking of erotic and sexy entertainment, the Boulay brothers, of course, the creators of Dragula, have launched a podcast on Fangoria. I haven't listened to it yet, but I can't wait. And it's called The Boulay Brothers, Creatures of the Night. So, you know, I really love my erotica mixed with, you know, weirdness and dark, you know, just dark, weird stuff like dirty Pokemon toys. I'm sorry, I just can't stop. I don't know. You know, definitely I've been alone too long here during this quarantine. Things are getting to me here. But yeah, I can't wait to listen to that podcast. I'm sure it's going to be really fun and really witty, really interesting. I'm expecting that they'll have interviews with a lot of the people that they've worked with. It should be really a blast. So that's on Fangoria. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I have thought – oh, go ahead. You were going to say something.
Sure. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, you know, it's just that, you know, once again, talking about erotica and how much, you know, it's gotten so – you know, very, it's like almost like if you follow music, you know, it used to be like there was only like, about, you know, like a dozen different genres. And now, of course, there's hundreds, if not thousands. Same kind of thing goes with erotica. I'm not talking about like movies, not about like literature and so forth, because, you know, when I first started to write, it was, you know, it was fairly limited. Now it's like we have dinosaur porn and we have, you know, all kinds of different kinds of, you know, erotica. I mean, it's like, you know, like there's the steampunk version, and then that's not the steampunk, it's the steampunk erotica that happens to feature magical, you know, magical figures, and then it's like, you name it, there's something out there for it, and it's, you know, ridiculously popular, which, once again, I think is absolutely wonderful. I think it's just fantastic that people can find both the ways of creating this as well as enjoying it, which, you know, I know it seemed like a booster here, but, you know, I just think it's really kind of cool, because, like, you know, for the first time, we have, like, limitless kinds of potential for, you know, erotic entertainment.
Yeah, and you know, I want to give the fan fiction people, the slash fan fiction people, a lot of credit, you know, and of course this has been going on for years and years now, but, you know, there was a point where people started writing stories based on characters in books and movies and television where they would pair up different characters in erotic combinations and really get steamy. And I'm not quite sure where those communities, where the fan fiction communities are hanging out now. I haven't looked for a long time, but I think they were in the advance guard of bringing out, as you said, you know, it's now more quote unquote amateur, though, you know, I don't even like that word anymore, but do it yourself, DIY porn, DIY erotic fiction, whatever, webcams, you name it. But I think the fan fiction folks were definitely in the vanguard. And and artists will do the same thing. Like on DeviantArt, you can find amazing artwork by super skillful artists, a lot of them. And there's definitely a certain amount of erotic content there. A lot, again, kind of in the fanfic genre. And I mean, I think the first time I really came across that was many years ago when I started finding images of the Spock and Kirk from Star Trek romance, you know, and of course that was, that Spock Kirk combo was made, you know, real famous by that Nine Inch Nails song. Somebody sliced together the footage from the Star Trek episode where Spock, you know, has to mate, or he's, you know, I don't know, he's going to go insane and then die or something like that. And some clever person spliced all that together and set it to Nine Inch Nails, I'm Gonna Fuck You Like an Animal. And it was just absolutely the best thing. I loved it so very, very much. And obviously, so did a lot of people. But, you know, I would come across these images of, you know, Kirk and Spock in a hot tub with the, you know, starry galaxy behind them. And it was very sweet, romantic. Yeah, this stuff is great. I love it so much. I really, really do. I love it when people do these kinds of things. Like, yes, yes, more of this. Less of Zoom, you know, trying to be a censor. Right?
Now, absolutely. In fact, you know, many people say that, that the whole fan fiction, the whole slash fiction came about because of Kirk and Spock. Now, there's probably people who did it long before, but because Star Trek fandom was so active, you know, that's sort of like they did a huge boost. But, yeah, it's like, the, you know, it used to be that fan fiction was kind of like delegated, you know, to kind of like, you know, the dark parts of, you know, the web and things. Now it's like a, it's totally mainstream. With many people actually moving from fan fiction to, you know, to actual regular mainstream fiction. So it's like, it definitely is a wonderful place, you know, to sort of like try out your writing chops. You do have to avoid, like, sometimes, like, charging money, especially if you're talking about copyrighted characters. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, a lot of people are very creative around that. But I think it's wonderful. I've never tried my hand at it myself, but I certainly have fantasized about it. But I think it's just, it's really quite fascinating again.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot. If you have fantasized about doing fan fiction slash fan fiction type stuff, who have you wanted to ship?
You know, it's interesting. It's like, I'm not trying to duck the question, but at the same time, it's like, you know, very often when I, you know, trying to get myself inspired, or I'm just playing around, because I think that's always important in the creative process, no matter what you're doing, is to have the sense of play, is I'll be watching a show or reading a or something similar, and I'll get like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, wait a minute, hey, let's say they missed an opportunity there, you know, this could be this, or this could be, you know, that, or, you know, it's like, you know, the plot's a little sloppy there, or sometimes I'll just challenge myself and say, okay, your mission today is write a Star Trek Next Generation episode, or, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or, you know, or Rick and Morty, you know, it's like, what would your episode be like? And, you know, It's interesting. It's like I find it very much a challenge, and sometimes the end result is something I don't want to talk about. Other times it's like, you know, hey, there's actually a story there, and, you know, I'll massage it and tweak it and take out the, you know, so you can't tell exactly where it came from. But, you know, I think it's a wonderful creative process. And, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, when you write erotica, I've often thought that, you know, one of the big mistakes people make when they're trying, not necessarily for their own entertainment, that's perfectly fine, you can do whatever you want, but when you're trying to sell it, they focus too much on the sex and not the story. And I know when I enjoy, you know, erotic entertainment, either I like certain visuals just because it's a particular, you know, erotic button. Most of the time, though, I look for story. And, you know, I look for the build-up, I look for characters, I look for the dynamics. And that's something you don't find, unfortunately, a lot of mainstream. That's why, I, you know, I either read erotica or, more than likely, I look at, like, you know, hentai, which is, you know, Japanese erotic comic books. Translated, of course. I don't speak Japanese. But yeah, I just it's interesting how that works. I mean, you know, I hope that kind of like avoid the answer without avoiding the answer.
No, it was a good answer. You weren't specific about your characters, but that's okay. That's okay. I was just curious if anybody, you know, if you had some favorites that, you know, you've generally thought about or thought about writing. And it's all right. You ducked the question, but you did a good job anyhow. you know, dialing, or not dialing, but coming way, 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 way back for a minute for the long view, I remember when the book Sex at Dawn first came out. And this is a book, it's controversial, but, you know, supposedly based on some anthropology and stuff, that talked about how early humans probably did sex. And it was, unfortunately, it was very heterocentric. So that's one criticism I have of the book, because they really spoke only about cis male and cis female sexuality in the book. But it was basically kind of taken up by the polyamorists. It's like, see here, here's why polyamory is a good thing. It's in our DNA, basically. This is how we used to do it. Basically, multiple sex partners with a lot of people watching and being around while stuff was happening. And and definitely an emphasis on women with lots of sex partners and multiple orgasms and, you know, like that, you know, like one after another, come on boys. So I think that it's quite possible that human beings evolved. I mean, we have mirror neurons, we've got all this stuff, that there's something about being able to watch and also listen, because apparently human cis females have one of the loudest mating cries ever if we let ourselves go, and most of us don't. But I think there's something that's very deep and visceral and primordial and whatever about connecting with other people having sex. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's something that we will ever be able to and I don't think we should be try to suppress, you know. Yeah, I mean, have ethics about how you do it and what you show and who's involved. But I think this is a really, really deep part of human nature and human sexual behavior. And all these different forms of erotic entertainment satisfy that. So, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. I think it would be really cool to see some studies about erotica and porn and mirror neurons and what have you. And I actually haven't gone to look for those things, but there might be something out there. In fact, there probably is. I'll get on Google Scholar sometime, you know, while I'm looking for my Pokemon shaving, steam cleaning thing. I'll also check out the studies on mirror neurons and porn. Why not? So one of the things I thought today, and I know I ran this past you earlier very quickly in a text, but I thought we might try for the first time seeing if anybody wants to call in, because we do have that capacity in this podcast. So what do you think? Are we ready to give the call-in number and
sure.
see if anybody phones? Okay.
I'm definitely curious.
Okay. Yeah, because I know a lot of people don't listen live. They're listening to the archive. But let's try it. All right, if you call in the number, 516-531-9238, we could put you on the air and you could ask us a question or give us a sampling of your views. So let's see if anybody bites. That's 516-531-9238. 9238. Is there anybody out there who wants to call? And I'll keep my eyes focused on the switchboard so I can see if anybody calls. And if they do, I'll be able to get them on the air. So in the meantime, yeah, where else do we want to go with this topic?
Well, I kind of want to touch a little bit on what you were just talking about there previously, is that, you know, it's unfortunate that there are still people out there who think somehow that adult entertainment is detrimental, that you could become addicted to it, or that it somehow harms your sexuality. And I just want to reiterate that, you know, while there are, you know, many studies going out there, the predominant view is backed up by science, is that porn addiction, if it exists, is extremely rare. And as long as it's consensual, both in the creation and the enjoyment, enjoy yourself. I mean, you know, there's much that can be gained from erotic entertainment. You know, there's certain things I think that are kind of, you need to be careful of. One of them is having unreal expectations of, you know, actual human sexuality when you watch or, you know, enjoy, well, you know, erotic entertainment, because it is fiction, you know, and that's something to keep in mind. It's like, this is not a reflection of reality. Even the videos that are, you know, by amateurs, they don't show a lot of what happens before and afterwards. So, but, you know, once again, it's like, if you enjoy something and it's a consensual behavior, it doesn't get in the way of your life, then go for it. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think where it does become an issue is, say, if people are in a relationship where one or more partners are upset by another partner's consumption of and use of erotic material, and how those conflicts can play out. And often somebody who is quite upset about this may throw that word addiction around. There's not much of anything that supports the idea of actual addiction to any form of human sexuality. Compulsion, of course, you know, that is recognized. Even the World Health Organization now has a category for that. But even that, I think you have to be very, very cautious. And there are clinical parameters for diagnosing something as a compulsion. So it really has to happen when you've got the fact that erotic is an issue in a relationship. And for purposes of just making it easy, let's say it's a dyad, you know, but I want to acknowledge, you know, multiple relationships here too. But let's say it's a dyad. One person is consuming a lot of porn. Let's not immediately think that it's a cisgender guy, you know, with an objecting cis female partner. But, you know, let's just say two people. One uses it a lot. The other doesn't like it. Feels that, for example, that it might be a form of cheating, wishes that they had more of the attention from the other partner, you know, so there's some competition, there's some hurt feelings, there may be concerns about, you know, is the stuff the person's watching done ethically? You know, a lot of people are very concerned about violence against certain performers mm-hmm. that might be in different kinds of pornography, for example. You know, it's all good to look at that stuff, but people really have to untangle their own, I don't want to say insecurities because that sounds pejorative, but I think they have to untangle where their own feelings come into it, where their partner's feelings come into it, and what kind of agreements, if any, were made during the beginning, middle, or end of the relationship that had to do with this. And masturbation also comes into this too. I mean, there are some people who feel that if you're in a relationship, especially a committed one, that nobody should be masturbating. But, you know, that's not realistic either, and I don't think it's fair, you know? So I would say if people could just bring themselves to talk this stuff out and maybe be prepared to compromise a little on both sides. For example, if Saturday's your date night in the relationship, well, then don't spend 4 hours watching erotic material before you're supposed to be getting together with your partner, unless that's something that can contribute to the both of you having a good time. You know, and of course, there are mm-hmm. also people who watch stuff together and enjoy these things together too. So that's not impossible. It's, mm-hmm. it's just really has to be it just really has to be negotiated and figured out, and you know, those issues where people get their feelings hurt and so on. Have you ever taught a class in how people can negotiate erotic materials in their relationship? I'm just wondering.
No, but you know, I'm talking about this, having this discussion, I think it's a great idea. You know, because I think it's one of those things, it's like, it's unfortunate that, you know, the stigma around masturbation is still around. And, you know, once again, it's like, you know, masturbation, there's nothing wrong with it. It won't do anything to you except, you know, give yourself a good time. And it's really quite distressing that, you know, more than once I've, you know, run across people who actually certainly believe that somehow it's going to, like, damage their sexuality, or it's morally wrong or something similar. And it's really quite disturbing. I mean, particularly things like the no fap, you know, or flap, whatever it's called, November idiots, you know, it's just like, oh, it just makes me just, you know, cringe, and, you know, my blood pressure rise. But you're right. It's like, I think it's a wonderful idea, because I think it's like, it's one of those factors. I mean, it's like, you know, so much more damage has been done in relationships over guilt and shame, you know, than anything else. And once again, you know, as long as it's not interfering with, you know, your day-to-day life, or, you know, it's something that is, you know, somehow damaging, it's like, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you write erotica, what do you hope for? This is turning into a me interviewing you thing here, but I mean, when you're writing the erotica, what do you hope people will get out of it when they're reading your stuff? What are you hoping for them to have a lovely time?
You know, it's interesting, but, you know, I've often kind of felt that in the world of erotica, thank you very much for asking questions. I feel very, very honored and very happy. You know, I'm blushing too, because fairly reserved around this. But you know, it's interesting. It's like, I mean, for me, writing erotica, I mean, I approached it, and I still approach it, as a storyteller. And I really don't often think about arousal, because I can't control someone's arousal. I've actually had people reject my work saying they weren't turned on. It's like, well, I don't know what your particular interests are. I mean, I can't write specifically to every person out there. But, you know, for me, it's like, just to tell a good story, which is kind of the same way I enjoy adult entertainment myself, because I like the build-up, I like the characters. I actually kind of see, when I write erotica, as being I'm writing about sex as opposed to actively trying to turn someone on, because there's so many different factors in sexuality, you know, so many complexities. And I think that's what I particularly enjoy, you know, kind of like exploring.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, how can you know what's going to turn somebody on or not? You know, and that brings up another aspect to this, is that there are some things, say music, films, TV, paintings, whatever, that can be very evocative, very moving, even arousing, but they're not necessarily explicit. And, you know, that can be a song that somehow has the right kind of beat and the right kind of emotional flavor, that it gives you an experience of yearning or lust or whatever it is, you know, that's been triggered at the time. I'm also thinking of how in the objectum sexuality community, their erotica is around photographs, images, or models of the objects that they're either specifically attracted to and in relationship with, or the kinds of objects that they're attracted to. And so, you know, it's kind of funny when I think of the movie The Station Agent, where there's a whole group of people who are just like totally into watching footage of trains, right? It's a great movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it. I kept looking at that, imagining while I was watching it, oh yeah, you know, that's definitely getting at least a few of those people off. Because they're into the trains, you know. I mean, that's you know, that's my mind at work there. It's perfectly feasible to be fascinated by trains and not be, you know, erotically turned on by them. But, you know, that's where my mind went, you know, knowing something about the objectum sexual. So, you know, one person's erotica or trigger of erotic response will be another person's, you know, hamburger wrappers on the counter or Pokemon stuffed animal. I'm going to bring that in again.
Exactly. The same way that, I mean, people can get turned on by all kinds of things. I mean, you know, I consider myself a techno fetishist because I may not mean a direct erotic arousal, but I do love playing with technology. So when I get my new piece of hardware or discover my computer can do something really cool, it's like kind of squealing with delight there. But yeah, it's like on the darker end, you got, you know, J.G. Ballard's Crash, which is eroticizing car crashes. And, you know, it's like, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities around this. And it's just like, and again, I think this is really quite fascinating. And especially that now people who do have interests around these things can network and they can share and, you know, they can, you know, generate, you know, even people who, like, you know, we were talking previously about, you know, the convention around people who have fetishes around size. In other words, you know, people becoming smaller or larger. And I just think it's absolutely delightful and wonderful and really exciting that not only is that, does it exist, but they're organized enough to put on conventions where they will discuss it and they'll have vendors selling, you know, erotica around it. And I just think that's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And why shouldn't things like that happen? I want to say again, we've got 9 minutes left in the show. If somebody wants to call in, the number is 516-531-9238. You could be the very, very first person to call in this season's episode. So wouldn't that be special? I'm sorry, I do not have a door prize for you, but you know, you could just have that distinction. So you know you want to call us. 516-531-9238. Talk to us. Well, I don't see the switchboard lit up yet. Let's keep going. And if somebody calls, I'll make some sort of giant noise and say, "Oh, caller, somebody's calling," and then we'll let them do that. You know, I wanted to talk. You know, I'm always wanting to mention Disasterina because honestly, Disasterina is one of my favorite drag performers ever. And Disasterina just did this great new video called Quarantine Queen, and it's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's just brilliant and funny. I adore it, and it
that
is an opportunity.
Wonderful. That was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and there is an opportunity there to tip Disasterina if you enjoy the video. So go to Disasterina's YouTube channel, easily found. You'll find Quarantine Queen quite witty. I just, you know, I guess I like my... Am I going to call this erotic entertainment? Yeah, I am. I am, because there is something about watching a really good performer do something that's sexy, but also includes some social commentary and satirical element that just, you know, I really like it. It makes me feel alive, you know, and maybe that's another thing is some of this stuff may not necessarily go all the way to a sexual charge, but it makes you feel alive. It makes you feel glad to be alive. It makes you feel glad that you saw that thing or heard that thing. And I think I kind of include that in the maybe spectrum of human sexual response. You know, maybe the beginnings of some kind of arousal happens to do with, yeah, I feel alive again. So, yeah, so Disasterina, yeah. And also her show Sado Psychiatrist, which is quite funny and over the top, is actually found now on Amazon Prime, and it's $1.99 per episode in HD and only 99 cents in the not HD. So, you know, it's a nice 20 minutes worth of mirth and over the top weirdness, quite funny. Again, more satire. So, yeah, little shout out there. Well, Nobody's
and
called.
And that's once again. I listened to the YouTube song. That was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was absolutely delightful. I mean, the only thing I think is we're winding down here. I just want to kind of like reiterate that, you know, despite I've been so, you know, passionate and supportive, I do think it's important that once again to talk about the fact that only consensual, both consensual viewing and consensual performing, and that's always should be written in there, you know, pretty firmly because. You know, it's like, even though I keep saying things, oh, this is wonderful, it's only wonderful if there's consent. And that's the biggest thing. So, you know, but I just want to toss that out there because, you know, while I do think this is really important and, you know, erotic entertainment can be a very big benefit to people, you know, sexually and emotionally, I do want to reiterate that, you know, once again, keeping consent in there.
Consent, yes. Thank you for mentioning that. And adult, that's the other thing. So let's keep it that way. We are winding down. Nobody has called us. I'm going to sob, you know, into my pillow after this show. No, not really. It's okay. You and I can keep things going for sure. We're real good at that. But coming up, our shows, we've got our interview next week with Shakun Sethi, founder of Tickle.life. So that should be really wonderful. And then we've got a show on teledildonics, kind of a Teledildonics 101 on May 23rd. I'm going to be talking about pelvic organ prolapse on May 30th. So, you know, be there. Be ready to call in. On June 6th, we've got Read to Me, Baby, with about a lot erotic literature, possibly a guest there. Some other topics coming up, sexy science fiction, spectrosexuality, one of my favorite topics. And you know, we're just going to keep going, talking about stuff. And so, yeah. Well, I mean, I think we need to say goodbye right now. So, Chris, thank you again for another wonderful time here on the Saturday morning. Always delightful for me, too. And listeners, I hope you had fun. Hey, you know, get ready to call in. We're starting to do that. So if you didn't do it this time and you didn't, know that there's always a next time, next week, same time, same station. So thank you all. And this is Love's Outer Limits, signing off.